Okay. We are holding on Kofiyud Amud Beis, 8 lines from the bottom by the 2 dots. Mishnah had said, again, we're still talking about the case of Gezel Ager, person robbed money from a ger, swore falsely that he hadn't, or he paid it back, or what have you. Afterwards, he's murdered, the ger is dead, he has to give the keren v'chomish to the kohenim and bring a korban offering. So the Mishnah had said that not in a sakesa l'anshei mishmar v'chola, that if he gave the money to the kohenim who are on duty that week, the mishmar of that week, and then the gazlan died, then the yoshim are not able to get back that money from the kohenim. They can't say, well, after all, he's dead and he doesn't need kapara anymore. He ain't kapara l'meisim. Once it's by the kohenim, that's that. So we learned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah had mentioned a pasuk for that. The isha shayitin l'kohen lo yiyah. That anything that goes to the kohen, that is his. Mefarshim point out, though, based on the Gemara that we're going to learn now, that actually that's kind of only an asmachta. The Gemara is now going to give us a logical this concept that once it's given to the kohen, then that's it. It stays by the kohen. The real reason is what the Gemara is going to say now. I'm going to buy a shmamin or kesef mechapa mechta. We see from that then that the money, giving the money to the kohenim, accomplishes half of the kapara.
Because
if it didn't accomplish kapara, have aminim, had the yershin, then you would think it should be able to be returned to the yershin. My time, I died to the hachli la yardle. Because after all, you would say he didn't give it to him thinking that he's going to die, then he's not going to get kapara from it. So obviously, no. The reason why you can't get it back from the kohenim is not, again, not so much because of the pasuk over there, isha shayit makayin lo yir, that's on the anasmata. The real reason is because giving it to the kohen has, in fact, accomplished something. So therefore, you can't say, well, we want it back because it didn't accomplish anything. It did accomplish something.
But not the full thing.
Not the full thing, because you still need the asham, and the asham can't be brought after he's dead. But it accomplished what it was supposed to. Which, by the way, I mean...
Half of the kapara.
But for that reason, actually, in Shulchan Aruch it mentions, nowadays we don't have a carbon asham. If you have the same kind of thing, a person stole from somebody and is required to bring keren v'chomish and an asham gzeilus, or regular, it's a regular person where you have to give it to the nigdol, whether it's a ger where he's supposed to give it to the kohenim, he still has to do that part. He can't bring the carbon, fine. He won't be able to have that half of the kapara, but he still has to do whatever he can.
That's
the Rabban. If he wants to have the kapara. We're talking about his vader. He admitted that he did the aveira. He now wants kapara, so he has to accomplish whatever part of the kapara he can. Tosfos points out another.
When Mashiach comes, he'll have to complete that.
I guess when Mashiach comes, he'll have to bring the asham. I don't know. Again, maybe, I mean, if he's one of the people who died during the years of Golos and gets up by Tzchesa Mason, maybe not, because again, ain't kapara l'mason. Maybe once he died, then that's it. You know, he's a whole new person now. Okay, I don't know. Tosfos points out another nafka mina in any way, which is, given that we're saying that giving the money to the kohenim accomplishes half of the kapara, it means the kohen can't be moichel on it. Because you can't say that, even though we said yesterday in the end that they're receiving it as a matana, but they don't have the right to say, well, it's fine, you know, sona matana tiyachir, we don't need it, it's fine, you keep it, because then they're not allowing him to accomplish his kapara.
If they're moichel,
yeah. So therefore, they can't be moichel. Therefore, they have
they
to
can be moichel on the asham, though.
No, they can't. It's a carbon. It has to be brought. Okay. So the Gemara asks, if you're going to go like that, So what are we saying? Because of kesef machapa mechta, that's why you can't get it back. Implying, if it weren't for that, you would be able to, because you would be able to say lachatchila. When I gave it to the kohenim, I did it only on condition that it's going to accomplish kapara and half kapara, whatever. And like this, if you were to say that it doesn't accomplish half kapara, then you would say you're able to get it back. By that logic, elameyata, by that logic, chatos shemesa be'alel typical chulin. Then why shouldn't the chatos, whose owner died before the korban was brought? Why shouldn't it be able to go out l'chulin? Use the same logic.
Okay.
Say, I would never, well, Oshem will talk about it in a second, but a chatos first. The chatos we know is l'misa, that a chatos has to be left to die. So why? Why don't we say, when the guy was machlish his chatos, he never would have set it aside had he known that he's going to die before he has a chance to bring it. Therefore, retroactively, we should consider as if it never had kedusha. Why should it have to be l'misa?
Why would he never set it aside?
Because why would he want to set aside an animal that would go to Misa? The same logic as we're saying over here with the money that's given to
him. Just by the same logic, he would accomplish half the kapara.
Because we're saying he accomplishes half the kapara by giving the money to the kohen. But only because of that. Setting aside a chatos doesn't accomplish any kapara yet. So by that logic, why don't we say then, you set aside a chatos, you die. So okay, he never would have set it aside in that case. In that case, it should become retroactively chulin and not have to go to Misa. The answer is Amri. So the answer, no. Chatas shemaita b'alei. Hochas ha-gemiri. Lod l'misa adla. The fact is, it's ha-loch l'moshe mi-sinai. That a chatas shemaita b'alei has to be left to die. So therefore, that's it. You can't derive things from a ha-loch l'moshe mi-sinai. A ha-loch l'moshe mi-sinai just stands on its own. You can't derive logical influences from it and apply it to anything. Okay, elamayata osham shemaita b'alei v'leik v'kuchulin. Fine. Say by an osham whose owner died before he had a chance to bring it. The osham should be able to go out to Chulin, because again, you would never have set it aside knowing if you knew that you were going to die and this ashram is never going to be brought as a korban, but rather it's going to have to be left to pasture until it develops a mum. And the answer is ashram nami, again, it's part of the same halacha l'moshe mitzinai. Kol sheba chatas meisa ba ashram roya. But the general rule is any chatas which, any situation where if the animal is a chatas, it has to be left to die. There's five situations that the Mishnah tells us in Temura. In any of those five cases, if it was an ashram, then it has to be left to go pasture until it develops a mum and the money goes to kaitz and his bech. So the same thing. It's all part of the halacha l'moshe mi-sinai. So therefore, you can't learn from it to anything else. This one is actually not halacha l'moshe mi-sinai. Rashi says it's actually the Mishnah in Shkolim tells us it's a drasha that yoda and derived from the psukim. But it's the same idea. In other words, the point is that this fact is they go hand in hand, the chatas and asham, whatever happens, whatever case of a chatas would be lemisa and asham goes l'ri'ya. And again, therefore, you can't deduce from it to anything else. Okay. Elamayata, how about let's try another possibility by this logic. Again, by this logic that you would say, if it weren't for the kesef machapa mechsa, you should be able to get it back because you didn't have that in mind l'chatchila. By that logic, yivama shenafla litni mukashchin, suppose you have a woman who's a yivama, her husband has died childless, she has to do Yibur Mochalitza. Her husband's brother, her husband's only surviving brother, let's say, is a Mukashchin. He's got boils or whatever, some kind of disfiguring skin disease. Typical Chalitza, by that logic, she should be able to go out without Chalitza. It should be retroactively considered as if her Kedushin never took place. Da Daita the Hacha like Kedusha, because she never would have been Makadish herself, having in mind, if she had known that her husband is going to die and she's going to be potentially have to do Yibur with Mukashchin.
Or maybe he was not Mukashchin at the time.
But that's the thing. If she would have known by the time her husband died that he would become Mukashchin, she wouldn't have agreed to be Niskadish on the face of it. The answer is no. Actually, no. We can Anan Sadi, we effectively can serve as Edim that she would be willing to be Niskadish to the first person, knowing that eventually, even though there's a suffix that he might die and she might end up with his brother who's a Mukashchin. Kibish Lakish, like Rish Lakish says, Da'amirish Lakish, as we've had many times before, Tavla Mesav Tandum La Mesav Aramalu. It's better to live as two bodies than to live alone as a widow. A woman can't always afford to be picky about getting married. In terms of those days, you know, a woman who's unattached was in a very bad situation, a man less so. So a man wants to get married, but he's not quite so desperate, basically. So therefore, in other words, fine, you're not going to go so far as to say that for that reason you can't make her do Yibum with this Mukashchin. She doesn't want him, then you can force him to do Chalitza. We learned about that in Yavaz. However, you can't say that she would never have done Kiddushin with her first husband had on the possibility that she might end up in a situation over here with this Mukashchin, because the fact of the matter is she was happy to get married in the first place. Tandu means two bodies. I mean, the mace of Armalu, then to live as a widow. Tan means body, du means two. Gufshnaim, Rashi says. Tosfos points out a bit of detail about that. First of all, Tosfos says we must only be talking about necessarily where there was only Erisin. If there was Nisurin, there's nothing to talk about. Obviously, she was willing to get married to her husband, to get fully married and have relations with him and everything without any possibility of a suffix, what might happen later on. So that's the point. And it's not so, of course. The Maharam Rutenberg learned differently than Tosfos. He says that the Gemara's suffix over here may be even talking about Nisurin. And again, I mean, the same answer applies, Tavlamesa Tandu, et cetera, but still, there is a great deal of discussion among the Rishonim and Achronim about the relevance of this to what about if the brother is not a Mukashchin? What if he's a Mumer? What if he's a Meshuman? So there, and in fact, based on the implication of this Gemara, that were it not, that, yeah. the implication of our Gemara is that if it weren't for the Tavla Mesa Tandu principle, which says basically that she can't afford to be too picky, we would say that her Kedushin weren't chal in the first place. Very well then, a number of Rishonim say, based on that, if the brother is a mummer, then yes, we can say that she would, if she had known that her husband is going to die and she wouldn't have agreed to be niskadish to him. And therefore, you can say that in that case, the Kedushin are batal lamafreya, and therefore she can be potter from chalitza or yibum with this mummer. Right. Tumis was also talking.
She could marry somebody else also.
She could what?
Could marry somebody
no, that's
else.
The point. That's the point. She can marry somebody else. Not while she's married to her husband, obviously, because we only say that once he dies. Retroactively, we're going to say that the Kedushin were never.
No,
she's Muteres L'Chol. Sure. Tosfos also talks about over here that we don't say this more broadly. We don't say, for example, let's say a person bought something and it got damaged, that you should be able to say that he would never have bought it if it would get damaged. So Tosfos distinguishes because there's two sides to the thing. You need the mocher's das and you need the lekeach das. Here, Kedushin is really based on her willingness to be niskadish.
Tell me a second, if it becomes a mumar, she's not automatically divorced? She's still...
Not her husband, her husband's brother.
No, but if she's married to a mumar...
If she's married to a mumar, that's a whole different question. I think the halacha is that she has to get a get from him. I think the halacha is But that's not what we're talking about over here. We're talking about her husband died as a regular frum yid, and her brother-in-law is a mumar. Yeah. Okay, let's continue. The Mishnah said nothing as a kesef liyahyariv kola. That suppose we said in the Mishnah that if you gave the money to Yahyariv, the first Mishmar, and you gave the Osham to Yadaya, the second Mishmar, to Yoyotze, because at least you gave the money before the carbon. But if you gave the carbon, if you gave the Osham to Yahyariv and the money to Yadaya, then im kayim Osham, the Mishnah said, if the Osham is still existent, then Bnei Yadaya should bring it, meaning we take it away from Yahyariv and give it to Yadaya. And if not, then he has to go bring another Osham. So now the Gemara is going to expand on that. Turn it up on him. Nosam Osham liyayorev v'kesef liyadaya. If he gave the Osham, the korban, to Yahyariv, the first Mishmar, and he gave the money to Yadaya, which is the second Mishmar, yachtu kesef etzel Osham, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says the money has to go where the Osham is. In this case, the Osham is by Yahyariv, so therefore the money gets taken away from Yadaya and given to Yahyariv, to the previous Mishmar. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Whereas the Chachamim says the other way around. The Osham has to be brought to where the money is. So the Osham is taken away from Yehoyariv and given to the second Mishmar to Yedaya. So, Hei Chidami, the Gemara asks. Well, the Gemara asks, what's the scenario over here that they would be arguing about? The question is like this. In the Mishnah, we said, the scenario in the Mishnah, we said, was that if you gave the money to Yehoyariv and you gave the Osham to Yedaya Yotze. We said if the Osham was given to Yehoyariv and the money to Yedaya, what we do is we cancel Yehoyariv because they shouldn't have taken the Osham. They know that the Osham can only be brought after the money is returned. The money was given to Yedaya, therefore they have no business with that Osham, and therefore we cancel them. So now we take the Osham away from them and give it to Yedaya. So now in this Braisa where we're saying in this Braisa, what are we saying? Effectively, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that we cancel Yehoyariv by taking the money away from them and bringing, or the other way around, we cancel Yedaya, the second Mishmar, by taking the money away from them and giving it to Yehoyariv. And the Chachamim are saying the other way around, we take away the Osham from Yehoyariv, we cancel them. So the Rabbanon, we can readily understand, why is Rabbi Yehuda canceling Yedaya? What did they do wrong? So, Hei Chidami. You're going to say that you gave the Osham to Yehoyariv during their week and the money the next week to Yedaya during their week. Well, then you should say each one was Zoche in their own. Okay, so let's say, for example, fine. You can understand that Rabbanon then would say that the Rabbanon would say that fine. We still can't see Yehoyariv. The fact is, they shouldn't have taken the Osham ahead of the money. They got the Osham illegally. Therefore, we're going to take it away from them and give it to Yedaya, the next Mishmar. But why would according to Rabbi Yehuda, why are we canceling Yedaya? What did they do wrong? That certainly Yedaya should be entitled to the money that they received. Why should we take it away from them and give it? And again, why should we take it away from them and give it to Yehoyariv for the previous Mishmar? Amar Rava Hachav Mayaskinan to Yehoyariv Osham the Yehoyariv b'Mishmar to Yehoyariv b'Kesef the Yedaya b'Mishmar to Yehoyariv. No, the situation is like this: both of them took place during the same week, during the week of Yehoyariv's turn in the Beis Mikdash. You gave the asham to your yoriv when it's their mishmor's turn. You gave the money to Yedaya also during that same week of your yoriv. You gave it to them a week before they came to the Beis Mikdash. So in other words, both mishmaris, in a certain sense, have done something wrong. Yehoyariv has done something wrong by taking this asham, because the asham is not supposed to be taken before the money. Yedaya has done something wrong by taking the money when it's not their week yet. So now the question is, who do we cancel? Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Kim Dalav Mishmeres, Yedaya he. So Rabbi Yehuda says like this, since it's not Yedaya's turn yet, their turn is next week, Yedaya continually, therefore Yedaya is the one who is the one who we cancel.
They shouldn't have
accepted it when it's not their turn. If they waited until the following week, sure, it would be their turn, no problem. They did what they're supposed to. But like this, they took it a week early. Hilkach, you have to cast the faith to Asham. Therefore, you have to take the money away from them and give it to Yehoyariv, who has the Asham. Okay, Yehoyariv also did something wrong by taking the Asham first, but Yedaya did something more wrong by taking it when it's not even their turn.
They should have taken anything.
Exactly. V'rabbanan sabri, shaloi kadin hu avud b'nei Yehoyariv to kiblu Asham mekame kesef, whereas the Rabbanan hold it's the b'nei Yehoyariv who really did something wrong by taking the Asham before the money. Therefore, they're the ones that we cancel the after Asham Eto Kesef, and therefore we take the Asham away from them and give it to go along with the money. Meaning, in other words, therefore that Yedaya will end up with both of them, and therefore and they'll take care of the whole thing when it's their week, the next week.
We consider who did the most wrong.
Who did the most wrong, in a certain sense, yeah. Okay. Tanya, Omar Rabbi, the Divir Rabbi Huda. So according to this, then it comes out according to Rabbi Huda, in Kodmu Bnei Yehoyariv Kruvu Asa Asham. If Yehoyariv went ahead and brought the Asham again illegally because the money hadn't been given yet, Yachsev Yavi Asham Acher. Then you have to bring another. Then the Gazlan has to bring another Asham. The Yakrivu Bnei Yedaya, the members of Yedaya will bring that carbon. The Zochu Halolu B'Mashu B'Yadam. However, so they were makir of a carbon, but
they shouldn't.
No, can he sue? I don't know if he can sue them. He gave them the carbon. You know,
not allowed to makir, so
they're not allowed to be makir in a certain sense. Because of Kippurim. Actually, that's what we're going to talk about. The carbon itself may be possible. Let's talk about it in a second. But
they will not be prevented of serving on the regular mishmar after they did a thing like that.
Why would they be prevented? They're not going to know.
No. They don't have to pay for it because
they made probably not. No, the pastor's not. So, the Yakrivu Bnei Yedaya, the Zoch, however, these people, Yehoyariv, are Zoche in what they have in their possession. Meaning the Asham, which is fossil. So, Amri, so they ask, well, my Chazi, Asham, well, my Chazi, what's it? No, Yehoyariv. Yehoyariv. Remember, again, the case is that, we just shelled in the Braisa. That you're talking about, you gave both of them, both the Asham and the money during Yehoyariv's week, but you gave the money to Yedaya instead of to Yehoyariv. So now we're saying that Yehoyariv went ahead and brought the Asham, not paying attention to the fact that the money had been given to the wrong party, and that's not there, and that it hadn't been given yet anyway. So we're saying that the Gazlan is going to have to bring another Asham. He's going to have to wait and then bring another Asham and give it to Yedaya, and they'll bring it during the following week. But we're saying Yehoyariv is zoicha in what they have in their hands. They're allowed to keep what they have. So what they have is the carbon. So that's the look. Amri, so they ask, L'mayachazi, what's it suitable for? Asham posel. It's an asham, which is a carbon, which is posel. It's asham hana, it has to be burnt. What do you mean they get to keep what do they have? What hana are they having out of it? Amarava la'ovai. What they benefit out of it is they get the skin. Now, so Tosfos over here discusses, and Tosfos discusses it at greater length in Zvachim, the question on that. On the face of it, if by the time the blood of the korban was sprinkled, it was posel, then the din is just as the meat is also to eat, so is the skin also to use. The whole thing is also b'hanah. The whole thing has to be ruined. So what are we talking about over here that they can have the skin? So Tosfos over here leaves it as a question. Tosfos and Zvachim discusses, and also the Rosh discusses, and some other Rishonim discuss a few possibilities. One is that maybe this concept that we're saying that the skin has to be burnt only applies when it's an obvious, visible problem with the korban. like this, for example, the carbon of the Baal Mum, let's say, and but nevertheless you shefted it and sprinkled the blood, the skin is still going to be also bahana. But let's say, for example, Tosfos mentions over there as a possibility, let's say, for example, you shefted the animal and found that it was trefa, you found that one of its internal organs was damaged. You didn't know at the time of the shvita that that was the case, you're not an x-ray machine. Therefore, the skin doesn't become osabana. So supposing that now, so if the skin, well, the thing is like this, usually, one other detail is like this, usually what happens is the normal seder of bringing a carbon is you sheft it, you catch the blood, you sprinkle it on the staff, and only after that do you start stripping off the skin from the animal and cutting it into pieces and so on and so forth. Now, so normally then, at the time the blood is sprinkled, the skin is still on the animal, still on the shefted animal. But suppose not. There's no halacha saying that the turban will be possible if you took off the skin ahead of time. So let's say they did it out of order. Let's say they shefted it. They took off the skin. Then they went and sprinkled the blood on the mizbeach. Then, as they're cutting open and dissecting the animal, they discover it's trefa. Then the skin doesn't, because then Tosfos argues over there one possibility. Maybe there's in the skin is not also bana because it was off the animal before the zrika. Yeah, that's one. Tosfos
didn't know that they didn't get the money.
Fine, they knew, but the fact of the matter is, it's not something. If you looked at the animal, you wouldn't see that there's anything the matter with it. So that's one. Another possibility Tosfos mentions over there is, let's say the money is supposed to be given before the carbon is even shefted. Suppose that not, though. Suppose that the carbon is shefted, and then he shows up with the money. Then the carbon is not necessarily possible then. Then you might be able to go continue with sprinkling the blood and do the rest of it, and then do the rest of it. You shefted it before the money is given, but the blood is only sprinkled afterwards.
Right.
Supposing the same scenario, that the skin was stripped off before the blood was sprinkled. So now the seder of it is the carbon was shefted, the skin was stripped off, then he showed up with the money, then they sprinkled the blood, then it would be good. Or then at least, let's put it this way, the carbon itself might be possible in the sense that you still can't eat the meat, and you shouldn't have been sprinkling the blood in the first place, but the skin is already off, and therefore the kohenim can keep it. Tosfos really doesn't like either of those answers over there, but that's what we're doing. Okay. Fine. Amar Reb. L'divrei Reb Yehuda. A further thing, according to Reb Yehuda, even though, now, it's true Reb Yehuda is saying that we want to make the bigger knas on Yedaya. Because we said again, the scenario was you gave the money to Yedaya during the wrong week, it was Yehoyariv's turn in the Mishmikdash. Nevertheless, nevertheless, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the Asham is still alive, then what you should do is take the Asham away from Yehoyariv and give it to Yedaya. Or actually what he says, no, well, we're trans, that's what we think he means. But all he's saying is you take the Asham and give it to those who have the money.
Even though those who have the money should not have gotten it in the first place.
That's the question. Rabbi Yehuda yachta kesef eitzel Asham Yisle. Doesn't Rabbi Yehuda hold that you take the money and bring it to where the Asham is, that you can't see Yedaya? Why, in this case, is Rebbe saying effectively that in this case we can't see Yehoyariv? The answer is Hacha Maiskin, it's going to nafak mishmar to do Yehoyariv v'leitavu. The case over here is, let's say, that Yehoyariv's mishmar ended. And during that time, during all of that week, the money had already been given to Yedaya. But wait, remember, what's supposed to happen, according to the Yehuda, is that if you did it like that, you're supposed to take the money away from Yedaya and give it to Yehoyariv. The assumption the Gemara is making over here is, for that to happen, now the Gazlan himself is not necessarily going to be the one taking it away from them, because once he gave it to them, to a certain extent, he's been Yosef, out of his hands. It's going to be Yehoyariv who's going to be responsible to go over to Yedaya and tell them, hey, you guys have money, have Gezel Ager, which was given to you this week, but that's wrong, it's all week, give it to us. Now what happened is, their week is over, and they didn't do that. Denofik Mishmar to do Yehoyariv, Yehoyariv's Mishmar ended, V'loy Tavu, they did not go and demand and claim the money from Yedaya. In which case, therefore, then what we're saying is that they were moichel it to them,
and that's why.
And that is why, in that case, what we do is we take the asham since Yehoyarib didn't end up bringing the Osham during their week anyway, then we allow Yediyah in that case to keep the money. We say effectively it's considered that Yehoyarib was moichel to them since they didn't ask them for it during that time. Therefore, Yediyah gets to keep the money and they can bring the Osham and everything's good.
The Gabayim are not obligated to
who are the Gabayim? What do you mean?
The Beis Hamikdash, they cannot correct that.
The Gizborim, you mean? The Gizborim deal with the treasury of the Beis Hamikdash. This isn't the treasury of the Beis Hamikdash. This is something that's given directly to the Kohen. I don't know. He maybe, but whatever it seems from our Gemara over here, that would be the responsibility of Yoyariv. Maybe not the whole Mishmah. You're not mad. The whole thousand of them crowded into the head of the Mishmah, whatever. Yeah, each Mishmah has one person appointed in charge of it. It would be his responsibility to take the head of Yediyah to Beis Din and then get it back in. Okay. By the way, Mefarshim point out, I mean, this isn't true as a general rule necessarily. You're not going to say that if Reuven claims that Shimon owes him money and then doesn't go and claim it from him for a couple of days, that he was moichel it. The difference is because he could get it any time. Whereas here, if Yehoyariv doesn't claim the money from them during this time, they're going to have to wait another 6 months until it's their turn in the Beis Hamikdash to be able to have a shot at it again. So there we have a reasonable reason to say that they were moichel on it by not claiming it during that week.
During the 6 months?
What would be canceled?
The debt?
No.
No?
No. That's, no. In an ordinary case, again, if Reuven supposedly owes Shimon money, and Shimon takes his time taking Reuven to Beis Din, you're not going to say he was moichel on it. Because he can collect it any time. But here, once Yehoyariv is out, once their turn is over in the Beis Hamikdash, it's going to be another 6 months. It's going to be another 24 weeks before they're back.
It's still standing even though the Mishnah is finished.
Well, it has to be given to somebody, right? So that's the point. If it wasn't given, that's the point, in other words. If it was given to Yediyah, so now Yediyah is going to put that Yediyah, if Yehoyariv wanted it, they wouldn't be able to have it for another 23 weeks until it's their turn again. Therefore, if they didn't ask for it this week, we can assume they were moichel it, and they were saying, fine, let Yediyah deal with it.
Because they have the carbon
with them, but again, they didn't end up bringing the carbon, so therefore we take the carbon from them and yet.
No, I understand they have the carbon.
Okay, so that's what we're saying then in that case. Because there's only a certain time, there's only twice a year when they would be in a position to be able to get this money and bring this carbon. Therefore, if they don't ask for it, if it was given to the wrong party, to Yediyah, and they didn't ask for it during that week, then it means they were willing to forfeit it.
Until the next?
Well, they're not going to wait around. They're going to expect the Gazan to wait around another 6 months. See ya.
They have to give their Osham.
But you can't expect that Osham is not going to sit around for another 6 months. Okay. Tanya Idach. Now we learn another price. The Omer Rebbe, the Divrei Rebbe Yehuda, im kayim Osham yachta ketzef etzel Osham. Rebbe says that according to Rebbe Yehuda, if the Osham is still in existence, if it wasn't shechted yet, then the money has to be returned to the Osham. The question is, Pshita, Hachi Yisle. Well, that's exactly what Rabbi Yehuda said in the original Brayt, the Yachta Ketzef Eitzel Osham. What is Rebbe adding over here? The answer is, Hachi Ba'eskin, Goni Nokach Meshmartim, Dehani, Udahani, V'loi Tavu. Now, let's take a further scenario based on the one before. Let's say Yehoyariv's Mishmar passed, and Yediyah's Mishmar also passed. So Yehoyariv didn't ask for the money during New Week. Yediyah didn't end up bringing the Osham during New Week. So now both of them are out of the picture. So now you would think that neither one claimed it from the other. So you would think in that case it means they were moichel to each other, and in that case we should go back to the way. In that case we should go back to the default. Therefore we'll leave it if they were moichel on each other, and it works. It would mean, in other words, that yes, Yehoyariv 6 months from now is going to that 6 months from now when Yehoyariv is back. They're going to ask for the money and bring the carbon. The Mela, in the previous case, once they gave it up in their week, then fine. We don't assume that Yediyah is available right there. We don't assume that they meant to wait another 23 weeks until their turn again. But now, if both of them were moichel to each other, you would think maybe they are, and maybe that means it all goes back to Yehoyariv. Kamash Malon, Damrin, and Kivin Blay Tavri. No, sorry. If they were moichel to each other, no, it would mean. If they were moichel to each other, it would mean then that. So what would it mean if they were moichel to each other? then it would mean that it means therefore that neither of them is going to get it, and they'll maybe both give it to another Mishmah. Kamash Malan, Kadamrin and Tivin Delay Tavi Lehadra Beresha. No, we say that since neither one of them sued, it doesn't mean they were Moichel to each other. It means we go back to the way it should have been originally, that according to the Yehuda, the money is brought to where the Asham is. Yehoyarib still has the Asham in their possession. Therefore, yes, we're going to wait another 23 weeks and have Yehoyarib take the money and bring the Asham. But in other words, we don't say they were moichel to each other, and therefore both of them are out of the running. It means they're moichel to. It means that there was sort of a temporary that Yedaya was willing to temporarily be moichel and say, "Well, wait till it's your turn again." That if you bring your gezel, the actual the keren, before the asham, then that's the proper way to do it. Then you're yotze. But if you bring the asham first, you're not yotze. Menani nili. How do we know that? Omer Rava, the Omer Krok. The pasuk says ha asham amushav l'asham lakoyin. The asham, which we said yesterday, means the keren, which is returned is given to Hashem, and then from Hashem it goes to the Kohen. Milavad elakipurim asher yichapavoy. Besides for the ram of atonement with which kapara will be made for him. Mikal the kesef bereisha. So the implication is the money has to come first because it's saying the money besides for the elakipurim. Ha'asham arimushav Hashem means the keren, and milavad elakipurim means the korban. So the implication is that the money comes first, and then besides that you have the korban. However, one of the Chachamim then asks Rava, Elameata, by that logic, if you're going to say Milavad means that whatever was mentioned previously in the Pasuk comes first, and then Milavad, beside that, you have the second thing, then what about when it says by the Korbanos of Pesach, Milavad Ola Saboker, that you have to bring the Korban Mosaf besides for the Ola of the morning, the Korban Talmud of the morning? Hachinami Makal the Mosaf and Bereisha. What are you implying that the Mosaf are brought before the Korban Talmud? But we learn in Hebrew, how do we know that nothing else can be brought before the Talmud Shal Shachar? Therefore, the Pasuk says he should arrange on it, on the Mizbeach, the Oila. But Omer Rava, Ha Oila means Oila Rishona. The Oila means like sort of like the special. Oila is the Korban Talmud. No, it's the Korban Talmud, the Korban Oila, yeah. But it means the Oila as in the special Oila. So that Tosfos explains, in other words, it means the first Ola that is mentioned in Parashas Pinchas, namely the Korban Talmud, because it goes in order. First it talks about the Talmud, then it talks about the Musaf and the Shabbos and the Shodesh and the Yom Tovim. So Ha Ola implies the first Ola that's mentioned in that parish.
If it said some Ola, it would mean
Baruch Ola, it could mean any Ola, yeah. So therefore, in other words, Fakir, there you see that the Korban Talmud comes before any Korban Musaf. So over there, then Milavad Olas Haboker means on the contrary. It means the Olas Haboker is brought first, and then on top of that you have the Musaf. So how are you telling me that in our pasuk Milavad Eilak Yiporim means that first you bring the money, then you bring the Asham?
It could be the other way
around. Maybe it could be, yeah. Amalei, no, what I'm doing is I'm not just learning from the word Milavad. It's true. The word Milavad, you're right, can mean either way. What you have to do is you have to look at the context. I'm actually learning it from the fact that it says Milavad Eilak Yiporim Asher Yichaper Boy Nafkele. Yichaper is Lashon Ofid. It's the future tense, meaning Va'adayim Lo Kippur, meaning at the time when you give the money, it has to be Asher Yichaper Boy, that he will yet bring the aisle as a korban, as opposed to, in other words, when it comes to the korban Musaf of Pesach and it says Milavad Olas Haboker, you're right. From context over there, we understand that it means because of Ha'ola, it means that the Olas Haboker comes first. So the word Milavad itself could mean either way, but you have to look for other clues in the Pesukim. Here, since the Pasuk, otherwise, if the Pasuk meant that the korban could come first, it could have said Milavad Eilak Yiporim Asher Kippur Boy. Asher Yichaper Boy implies that it's in the future tense, that it will yet happen after he returns the money. And therefore, it has to be after he gives the money. Then the Mishnah had finished off nothing like a keren chola, that if you paid the keren but not the chomesh, then that ain't a chomesh ma'akiv. We said the chomesh does not prevent the kapara. We discussed yesterday, the keren does not the chomesh. We discussed yesterday the possibilities. Does that mean that does that mean that he can bring the Ashram, but nevertheless his kapara is not complete till he brings the Chomesh also? Or maybe it means the kapara is completed by the Keren and the Ashram. He is still obligated to bring the Chomesh. It's just a regular monetary obligation then, not part of the kapara per se. A knas in that sense, but not part of the kapara per se.
The conclusion is what? Do you want?
The different Mefarshim explain in different ways. They explain even what Rashi says on the topic in different ways. The last Rashi here says Ein Achomish Ma'akav the Kapara. The implication being, in other words, that it's not Ma'akav the Kapara. You can bring the Torah, but nevertheless, though you still have to bring it at some later point. But the Kapara itself has already been accomplished. So turn around, Minayin Shemehavim Ilosei V'Lehavi Hashom. This Braita is going to talk about a related concept. We know in the case of Me'ila. So Me'ila, we know you have the same kind of thing. You have to pay that Hekdesh the value of what you use, plus a Chomesh, plus bring an Asham, Asham Me'ila. And then you have the Kapara. So Minayin Shemehavim Ilosei V'Lehavi Hashom. How do we know that if you paid off your Me'ila but didn't yet bring your Asham, or Asham V'Lehavi Me'ilosei, or you brought your Korban Asham and did not yet pay off the Me'ila, the Keren, Shalo Yotza, that in either way you've not been Yotza, you have not accomplished your Kapara. Therefore, the Pasuk says, Be'el ha'asham v'hisvakloi, with the ram of the Asham, and then he'll be forgiven. So El means the ram, means the Korban. Yeah, and Asham means the money. Means the Keren, like we said yesterday.
So first the ail?
No, it doesn't mean first the ail, it just means that you need both. How do we know that if you bring your korban before paying off the me'ila, you were not yotze? That's not the right order to do it.
Exactly.
The ail ha'asham means ha'asham b'kvar. The ail ha'asham means the ram which is brought as an obligation on top of the asham. Doesn't mean that the ail comes first and then the asham. It means the ha'asham b'kvar. It means the asham has already been brought. And now you have an ayah which is associated with that.
The
ayah that follows the asham. Continues the bride. Yochok kashem sha'ayah v'asham ma'akim kachoyvish ma'akim. So you would think in that case, if just as the korban and the keren are ma'akim, without them you don't have the kapara, kachoyvish ma'akim, you would think maybe the choymish is ma'akim as well. Therefore, the pasuk just mentioned those two things, the ayah and the asham, and then he's forgiven, meaning ayah v'asham ma'akim lehekdesh ve'en choymish ma'akim. The Chomesh is not max.
As long as
you paid the Keren and as long as you brought the Ayah.
Yeah, but you do it in that order.
Yeah. The Yalamid Hektish Mehedyat, the Hektish Mehedyat Mehektish. Furthermore, also in that connection, we can learn the case of Hektish from the case of Hedyat, namely the Gezel Ager that we've been talking about. And we can learn the case of Gezel Ager from Hektish. Hektish Mehedyat, we can learn something as far as the din of Hektish, as far as Me'ila from Hedyat, is ma Osham Dehotham Keren, af Osham Dehotham Keren. Just as when it comes to Gezel Ager, the word Osham means the Keren, as we established yesterday in a couple of places. Af Osham Dehotham Keren. Therefore, you know also that when it comes to Me'ila, the word in the phrase, the Eil HaOsham, that the Osham means the Keren. Otherwise, you don't have anything in context over there by Me'ila to tell you that the word Osham means the Keren. You would think it just means the korban. Maybe you just bring the korban and you're
nisgat.
It's based on from the hediyot, from the case of Gezel Ager, that you know the osham means the keren. The hediyot mehekdesh, and furthermore we learn the case of hediyot from hekdesh mahekdesh and chomish ma'akiv. Hediyot means Gezel Ager. From the case of hekdesh, from the case of Me'ilah, ma'hekdesh and chomish ma'akiv, ach hediyot nami and chomish ma'akiv. Just as by the hekdesh, the chomish does not prevent the kapara, because again, the pasuk clearly only mentioned the ayil on the osham, nothing else. The same thing by the hediyot, the same thing by the Gezel Ager, the chomish is not ma'akiv, the kapara has been accomplished, can be accomplished without them. So Tosfos points out that we do have one other detail that is in fact mentioned by both. We do have this detail that we said that the Asham has to be brought only after the Keren. We have it mentioned by Gezel Ager and we have it mentioned by Me'ila. Why didn't we also learn that one from the other? And the reason is, Tosfos says exactly that. Once you have a comparison between them as far as that fact that the Keren has to come before the Asham, then we can already use that as a basis to derive that other things are similar between them as well. The meaning of the word Asham and the fact that the Chomesh is not active, but you need some basis to begin with to say that Me'ila and Gezel Ager have some commonality.
So here we just
that commonality is based on the fact that in both of them you have to bring the Keren before you bring the Korban. Hadron Alacha Gozalei. This last perek is more on the topic of Jela, as you can see from the first word of it. The Meiri actually summarizes. He says it's kind of hard to. It's kind of hard based on what he's saying to summarize what the perek is all about. He lists 11 major topics in the perek, and we're talking about a perek of only 9 blocks. But many of them have to do with many of them, they basically all have directly or indirectly to do with Gzela. So, Mishnah starts off. If somebody stole or robbed rather, and he gave what he stole to eat to his children, or he placed it in front of them, which we'll talk about in the Gemara what that means. Basically, it means that they inherited it from him. And then they are potter from paying for it.
He's not,
obviously. He's the gazlan. He's chayav to pay. Wait, that's what the Gemara is going to take up. The imhaya davar sheyesh be'achrayus, but if it is a davar sheyesh be'achrayus, chayav and l'shalom and chayav to pay. Now, davar sheyesh be'achrayus, we're going to talk about in the Gemara, there's two possibilities what it can mean. It can mean karka, but it can have another meaning as well. Wait. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Omer of Chisda. If somebody stole and the owner did not yet have yish, somebody else, a third party, came and ate it from him.
Completely, or just to return the actual zela?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about in the Gemara. That it depends on zela kayemes or zela in kayemes.
That's part of
the pshat in the Mishnah would be the potter completely from paying.
Yes.
But we're going to see there's going to be cases where they are chayev to pay. That's what we're going to get into in the first sugya over here. So, gazov le'nisyashu abayim. So somebody stole. The owner did not yet have yush, which means therefore that the thing is still in the reshus of the original owner. Somebody else comes and takes it from the gazlan. Later on, when the balabas comes to get his property back, he can collect from whichever one of them he wants. He can't collect from both of them, obviously, that Amar points out, but he can collect. He can collect all from one of them, or all from the other, or half from one and half from the other, whatever. My time, Kol kamad l'nisyash rabaylam, because as long as the owner did not have yush, then that object is still considered to be in the reshus of its original owner. So therefore, when Shimon stole it from Reuven, then it was still considered in Reuven's reshus, and Shimon is obligated to return it. Now, when Levi took it away from Shimon, it still remains in Reuven's reshus. Now, Levi, by eating it, has effectively stolen it from Reuven. Therefore, he's equally on the hook as Shimon is.
You could say that he destroyed it. Levi didn't destroy it.
No, on the contrary, Levi is the one who ate it.
The one who ate did destroy the thing.
That's the point. In other words, if Levi hadn't destroyed it, Shimon would just give back the actual thing. Now, like this, the thing doesn't exist anymore. So both Shimon and Levi are equally on the hook to pay for it. As Tosfos discusses a bit, among other things, Tosfos says that if the owner hadn't had yush, if the owner had had yush, then you can only collect from Shimon. Then by the time Levi takes it and eats it, it's already out of Reuven's reshus.
It depends when the owner had yush.
No, before Levi took it, obviously, right. Yeah, Tosfos also gets it. We've discussed earlier in the Masechta the whole concept of shinu reshus, that when it's transferred from one person's reshus to another, then that also has a bearing on this. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says Tanan. All right, let's consider our Mishnah and see if we can make that fit. We said a person steals and feeds that stolen food to his children, or he placed it in front of them, then they're potter from paying. Isn't that a contradiction to Rav Chisda? According to Rav Chisda, the sons should be chayav to pay. So they ate it. Again, if they hadn't eaten it, then they just have to return it to aim. That's that. But now,
has to return his father or the children?
Well, if the father's still alive, then him, and if not the children, the pashtos. But the point is, now that it's been eaten, l'chora, both the father and the children are equally on the hook to pay for it, and yet the Mishnah is pathering the children. Yes, but that Mishnah is talking about where they ate him after yush. So that's different.
One,
Rav Chisdet said, if loynis yashra bailin and somebody else ate it, then rotzim is egoy v'rotzim is egoy. Our Mishnah is talking about a different scenario. We're in a siyash where the gazlan took it, the balabas was in a siyash, and now the gazlan fed it to his children. Fine, so there was already yish. So therefore only the gazlan himself is on the hook for it. He's dead, so that's it. The children are positive. The Mishnah continued, Iminiach l'fneim p'turim l'shalim, that he placed it in front of them, they are positive from paying. Now, placed in front of them, the pashtus means that he bequeathed it to them, that he died and they inherited it. So, Amar Rami Bachama, Zoy Semeres, Rishus Yerish, Rishus Lekeach Dami. So that we see from this then that the ownership of a Yerish is like the ownership of a Lekeach, of a buyer. It's considered a different Rishus. So therefore, if we're saying, again, the Rav Chisdet had said that
children of Turin.
One second. Rav Chisdet had said that our Mishnah is talking about l'acha yish. The guy stole it. The owner had yish, and now we're saying he bequeathed it to his children. If we were to say that as yoshim, it's still considered as if it was a continuation of their father's rishus, then it doesn't matter that he was mitzyash. They'd still be on the hook to pay for it, just like the guys would himself would. But if we say that Rishus Yerush is like Rishus Lekeach, it's the equivalent of as if he sold it to them, and therefore, again, since he was Nisyayish before he was ever sold to them, then they're potter. It's only the Gazlan himself who's chayiv to pay. Then the Mishnah fits very neatly.
If you say that their Rishus is like the...
is like the Rishus of a Lekeach.
But you say it's not.
That's the point. That's the Rami Bahama's point. We see from this Mishnah that it has to be. Rava Amar, no, Rishus Yerush Lavke Rishus Lekeach Dami. No, a Yerush is not considered like a Lekeach in that sense. He is. It's still considered as if it was in their father's Rishus. But the case that we're talking about over here again, you're assuming that he niach lefnehem means that he left the actual stolen object in front of them. In other words, that the actual stolen object was still in his possession when he died, and then they yashed it. No, Rava is saying that we're talking about after their father died, they ate it. So now, if it had still been around, then the nigzor would be entitled to get it back. But now that it's gone, then they're not chayav to pay for it.
Why can't you say that even though it's gone, they have to pay the equivalent in money?
Because they're not the ones who stole it. At most, they'd be chayav mishum kavod avi, and that's what we're going to talk about.
When you're asked if you have something that belongs to someone else and you say you don't, you're chayav.
That's if you yourself have it. Again, they themselves didn't steal it, and the actual object no longer exists. We're only talking about the monetary value of it, and with the monetary value of it, they didn't steal, and there's no shibud on their father's nechasim for it.
No shibud.
Well, unless there's kavka, which is what we're going to talk about in a second. That way. But the question is, but doesn't the Mishnah continues that if it was a davar sheyesh be'achrayus, then they're chayav to pay? Now, at this point, the Gemara assumes that davar sheyesh be'achrayus does not mean karka. It means something which can be definitively recognized, something which everybody sees all the time. So karka would be an example. But also, for example, Rashi says, let's say they stole a piece of clothing. And whenever somebody is wearing that clothing, people look and say, hey, that's the clothing that used to belong to Cloyne.
Right. It's sort of similar.
It's a defined object. That's what we're assuming that Dover Shiesh Be'achrayus means.
We said, but something do not have
Achrayus. No, but that, here we're using Achrayus in a different sense. Here we're saying that it's something that there's Achrayus in the sense that you can tell who it came from, basically. Well, that's what we're assuming.
Well,
it means.
It'd be different. Sure,
because the fact of the matter is that if we assume that that's what Dover Shiesh Be'achrayus means, because after all, the expression v'hoya Dover Shiesh Be'achrayus doesn't sound like it means he left them karka. Then it'd be, you know, if he left them karka, hoya Dover Shiesh Be'achrayus sounds like the thing itself that was stolen has achrayus. So that it could be karka, but karka is really ain't an exilus. Karka is really not considered stealable in halacha because it's always where it was before. Necessarily, we have to be talking about metalphalin, chora, but metalphalin that are definable, that are recognizable, that they came from Pliny.
That's
considered having achrayus. Well, achrayus in the sense that there's achrayus to return it. Achrayus in the sense that they're responsible to return it. So the Sefer is mentioning that. Evidently, then, the first part of the Mishnah is talking about that the Gzela itself still exists. So we're saying, in other words, if it's Davar Sheyesh B'Achrayos, then they have to return it because of the covet of their father. You don't want people to say, look, these guys are wearing a talus that their father stole. But other than that, if, let's say, for example, they stole a bag of money the father stole a bag of money or a jar of fruit or something, then that's not a Davar HaMasurim, it's not a Davar Sheyesh B'Achrayos, therefore they're not obligated to pay it back, even if they didn't eat it yet. So what is Rava saying? That the first part of the Mishnah is talking about Dafka where they ate it. Amalach Rava, no. Halchi Kara. You have to understand the Mishnah differently. We are using Dava Shiesh Be'achrayas in the more usual sense of Nechasim Shiesh Lehen Achrayas, meaning Karna. If Imhoya Dava Shiesh Be'achrayas, meaning if what their father left them includes Karka, if the estate that their father left them includes Karka, Chayav L'Shalom, then they're Chayav to pay because then there's a Shibur.
Isn't that obvious? Now we're talking about karka, and obviously karka is not,
the karka itself wasn't stolen. The point is that there's the shibud that existed because of this zela remains now on this karka, and therefore, but only in that case are they obligated to pay in the first part of the Mishnah to return the shalom.
If the estate has karka.
Right, but in other words, according to Rava, the key thing is not whether according to Rava, therefore, it comes out so far as follows. If they didn't eat what was stolen, then they have to return it regardless. If they did eat it, then it depends whether there's karka or not. That's what that would be, according to Rava, what the Mishnah is saying.
Why is the karka
for what? No, in general, karka is nechasim sheyesh lahem achrayus. There can be a shibud.
By anything.
What we're saying here is Rava is saying that you transfer, so to speak, the achrayus from the metalka to the karka.
Yes. Yeah,
that's not
really such a chiddush because in general you have that by any halvah, by any loan you have that.
But if
you borrow money and then the shibur.
You
don't have to stipulate. Ordinarily, achray is totally safe. No, achray is totally safe for something else if you're selling a field. But in general, a milva b'shtar has achrayus, which actually brings up a point. Tosfos brings up a point. Where's the shtar over here?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And the answer is Tosfos says. Tosfos answers the case is k'sha'omad b'din. The case has to be then that the father had been brought to Beis Din while he was still alive, and therefore at that point, because there's a koil on it, therefore it's considered a milva b'shtar. Now, if at that point he died, because the reason why a milva, Tosfos didn't say the word karel, I'm inferring that that's what Tosfos means. But the whole point of a shtar that you're able to collect from karka is because there's a karel, because everybody knows. Mainly that there's a karel.
The karel exists because the
shtar. Fine, whatever. The point is, in this case, because it was omer b'din, there's a karel. So therefore, that can be considered enough, like a milva b'shtar, maybe not enough to be able to collect from the chasim b'shabadim, but at least enough to collect from the chasim b'necharim, from land that he himself left.
Okay. Is it just in this case, or in general,
I think so, yeah. Okay. Onward. The question is, v'hamasni le Rebbe le Reb Shimon b'day? Why? But we know Rebbe himself, Rebbe who composed the Mishnayos, taught his son Reb Shimon. You should understand when our Mishnah says davar sheyesh be'achrayus, loy davar sheyesh be'achrayus mamish doesn't literally mean davar sheyesh be'achrayus meaning karka. El after the part of a chodesh bo chamor mechamer achrav. Even let's say the guy stole a cow and he plowed with it, or he stole a donkey and he was carrying burdens around with it. And everybody knows that this used to be Pliny's cow or Pliny's chamer, the nigzal, chayav and lahachzer, and they have to return it because of the covet of their father. So we see clearly that according to Rebbe himself, the nechasim davar sheyesh be'achrayus v'mishnah does not mean karka, it means anything davar amasuyim, anything recognizable, yeah. How can Rava explain differently? Ella Amar Rava. So rather, Rava says, okay, they take out the word Rava, they take out the word Ella, really, because Rava's not changing his mind. Adarav, Rava is going to strengthen what he says. He's going to say, I have a different source for it. You should know something, Rava says. Kisha Chivna, when I pass away, Rab Oshia Nafak Levati, Rab Oshia, from a previous generation, the one who helped compose the Brises, and who helped compose the main collection of Brises, is going to come out to greet me. the Teritza Masis in Kabasei, because I regularly explain Mishnayot according to how he taught. And in this case, I'm going to find you a Braisa that Rabbi Oshia taught, which says the way that I'm
so
saying.
He says it, saying it in the name of Rabbi.
No, he's not saying in the name of Rabbi Oshia. He's going to say, I have my opinion. I have my understanding of what Dovah Sheyesh Be'Achrayus means in our Mishnah. And I'm doing that because Rabbi Oshia taught it that way in his Braisa. So I'm for entering the Mishnah according to Rabbi Oshia. I, Rebbe himself, said differently. Doesn't matter. Many of the Mishnayos existed before Rebbe. So therefore, Rebbe's opinion, okay, Rebbe's opinion is respectable, but it's not necessarily the final word. Namely, the Tanya Rabbi Oshia, because Rabbi Oshia taught a Braisa as follows. A gozel machal is bonim, if somebody steals and gives them food to his children to eat, turim l'shalom, and the potter to pay, he niach l'tnem gzela kayemes. If he left the gzela in its original form, the gzela itself still exists, chayavin, then they're chayav to pay for it, they're chayav to return it, rather. Ein gzela kayem es p'turin, but if it no longer exists, if they ate it, then they're potter. Yiniach lehem avir machrayus nechosim, but if their father left them, machrayus nechosim, meaning karka, chayavin l'shalom, and they have to pay. Yeah, so therefore, in other words, so that's exactly how Robert is explaining our Mishnah. Okay, the Mishnah is missing words, but we can understand the Mishnah according to Rabbi Oshia rather than according to Rebbe. Okay, Omamar, so now let's continue. We said, Ein Gzela Kayemes Turin, so according to the sort of Oshia's Braisa then says that if the Gzela no longer exists, then they're potter to pay for it because they didn't steal anything. Name it, Tevet Yopta Rav Chista. So is this then a contradiction to Rav Chista? According to Rav Chista, they should still be hired. Again, Rav Chista's scenario was one person stole, the other person ate it, and both of them are equally culpable. So why is this right to say that they're potter? So Rav Chista can say that the Braita is talking La'acha Yush, and again, our Mishnah would be the same thing. Our Mishnah would also be La'acha Yush. Whereas Rav Chista's scenario was before you. Okay. Then we said that if the Gzela still exists, then they have to pay it. Name a Tevet Yub to Rami Bachoma. So in that case, is that a contradiction to Rami Bachoma? Rami Bachoma had doc said that that even if it exists, since the Yorish is considered like a Lekeach, so it's already considered, so Yush or not, so on the face of it, Yush or not, they're already a Lekeach, so therefore it's out of the Yeah. Rabbi Mechama can say that the Braisa is talking about before Yush. Before Yush, it's true. It doesn't matter whether your Yorush is like with a Kayaf or not. You can't be Koine like that. Shinu Rishus doesn't help without Yush.
You have to have Yush
in order for Shinu Rishus to work. Rabbi Mechama doesn't disagree. Yeah, Rabbi Mechama doesn't disagree with that concept. So if the thing no longer exists, fine, Rami Bachama says, I don't agree with what Rav Chista is saying. Rav Chista is saying that if the thing was eaten, lifnei yirush, then both of them are going to be chayav. I disagree with that. I say that even lifnei yirush, if the gzela is chayav, then if it still exists, they're chayav, and if not, they're potter. So none of them are contradicted by the Mishnah or by any of these Braisas. Rava would be contradicted by Rebbe's Braisa, but okay, Rava is saying, I don't need Rebbe's Braisa, I can use Rabbi Oshia's Braisa instead.